We're not just detaining foreign students in this country for speech crimes, Amy. We're torturing them too. If you listen to what happened to Badr Khan Suri, who's a Georgetown student who was also detained, the torture that he's gone through, the abuse, the sleeping on the floor, the denial of clean underwear, and now Rusmea Ozturk, Ayanna Pressley, congresswoman, told me that when she went to see her, she was denied health care. She suffered severe asthma attacks. She had her hijab removed without consent. I mean, we are Louisiana. That detention center in Louisiana is famous for human rights crimes. So why are people being sent from Vermont and Massachusetts and New York, Mahmoud Khalil, to Louisiana? That in itself is a question we should ask ourselves. We're torturing people again.
So, Mehdi, in that same interview, Ayanna Pressley said to you, this is not about the Trump administration. This is not about weathering the next 4 years. I believe this will dictate the next 100. We have 30 seconds. Your response to that?
I think she's right in many ways. I think we are in that historical period. Now, this is not just about Trump. You look at the global rise of fascism and authoritarianism. You look at what's happening with Narendra Modi in India and Orban in Hungary, Putin in Russia and Ukraine, Middle East autocrats. We are in that place where a democracy, the progress we made over the last 80 years, 100 years, is at stake, very much so.
Can a judge just stop immigrants from being sent to Libya on a U.S. military jet? And over 80 students were just arrested at Columbia. And Rubio said he'd pull international visas of students who were protesting. Your final thoughts in 5 seconds.
Fascism isn't coming, Amy. It's here.
Mehdi Hasan, the editor-in-chief of the media website Zateo, which is celebrating its one-year anniversary this week. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh for another edition of Democracy Now!
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Community Advisory Board will meet on Monday, May 12th, at 6:30 p.m. The meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held. Thank you.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, for the first time, the world will have an American-born pope. A Food for All Oregonian snack-in brings attention to the plight of kids going hungry in the state, and warnings from the Pacific Northwest senators about possible cuts to health care that could end up closing hospitals. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, May 8th, 2025. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks for joining us. Cardinal Robert Prevost becomes the first American pope, choosing the name Leo XIV. The Vatican announced the election of Pope Leo XIV, the first American pope in the history of the Catholic Church, shortly after white smoke appeared from the chimney of the Sistine Chapel on Thursday. The 69-year-old new pontiff appeared at the balcony in St. Peter's Basilica, with his first words as pope being, quote, "Peace be with you," end of quote, which he said in Italian. He also spoke in Spanish in a nod to his work in Peru. Prevost succeeds the late Pope Francis, who died at the age of 88 following health challenges. He paid tribute to Pope Francis and spoke warmly of him, along with leading the crowd in prayer. Prevost is considered similar to Pope Francis in his commitment to the poor, migrants, and marginalized groups. Overall, he's considered a centrist, but on many social issues, he's seen as progressive. The name he chose aligns him with the lineage of Pope Leo's, known for strong leadership in adversity. Prevost was born on September 14th in 1955 in Chicago, Illinois, and is also a citizen of Peru, where he lived for years as a missionary and later as an archbishop. The idea to end hunger in Oregon for children, especially those from undocumented families. This week, anti-hunger groups staged a unique protest. They called it a snack-in for the Food for All Oregonians bill that lawmakers are now considering in the state capitol.
Welcome to the Food for All Oregonians snack-in live from the Oregon State Capitol in Salem. My name is Ivan Hernandez. I work at Oregon Food Bank, here to talk about why food for all matters and why everybody, especially the kids in Oregon, immigrant children, deserve to have food, which SB 611 would grant them with a program like SNAP.
Hi, everyone. My name is Chase Van Langen. I'm an organizer here at the Oregon Food Bank. And on this beautiful day, we're down in Salem at the Oregon State Capitol with dozens of community members, Oregon Food Bank staff, and children to show our legislatures why passing Senate Bill 611 is so vital for the children of the state to have access to food assistance. I'm very excited to welcome everyone to our first annual Oregon Food Bank Snack-In. Like I said, we have a bunch of our own organizers from Oregon Food Bank, parents, community members, and a bunch of kids down here that are making their way to the Capitol right now. And we're going to go office to office and ensure that our legislators know why passing food for all Oregonians is so vital.
Chase, and do you know what actions people can take beyond sharing this with their friends?
Of course. I know a lot of our action emails out there go out, and for certain things like emailing our legislatures here at the Oregon State Capitol, make sure that they know that you support Senate Bill 611A or Food for All Oregonians. You can always join different actions that we're doing to kind of pressure those legislatures. You'll get emails for things like phone banks, text banks, pass-through programs, different things like that. So there are a lot of actions to take, but the most important thing here is to stay informed about what's going on with the bill. Make sure you're watching any certain updates that are going on, and just making sure that we let our legislators and our as constituents know why passing food for all Oregonians is so important.
Yes. Thank you so much, Chase. I'm here at the Oregon State Capitol. Maybe you've never been here. They have two sides. On this side is the Senate side. Across the hallway, you'll see different advocates, folks who are lobbyists, and all sorts of other people here. You might even see your legislators walking the halls. Further along that way is the House side. There are people gathering and advocating for policies that they care about. And I think we see some different people walking through.
These are some of the mini snacks we're going to be having with the kids that we brought today, and the adults can snack as well. Yeah, like I said, food for all Oregonians, and we're having the kids go around and make sure that our legislators know why passing food for all Oregonians is so important. The nutrition facts on here is actually just a description of Senate Bill 611A, Food for All Oregonians. And yeah, it looks like we're servings per bill. We have 3,200 kids ages 0 through 6 that are going to have access to food assistance and on SNAP. And we have a lot of different facts on what SNAP does nationwide, but more importantly for our state of Oregon, how many kids it lifts out of poverty, how much medical costs it decreases, how much food insecurity it reduces. It's just showing how important access to food and access to SNAP is important both in the country and especially in Oregon, which we're trying to expand here today.
And we have people walking and making their way down here, parents, kids, other community members, to talk about this important issue. But we actually do have the first kid who trickled in with their families is actually here. And you want to say hi, Jackie?
We're so excited to be here. I'm Jackie, and I work at Partners for Hunger Free Oregon. And I'm just so honored and excited to be here. It's so neat to have an opportunity where we can bring our kids and get them involved and educate them about this, and also use that as a communication tool to speak to legislators and let them know that these policies they're talking about and deciding on affect real humans and real people and real children. And being able to bring that reminder into their workplace feels really powerful. We're a statewide anti-hunger advocacy organization. And this is such a central bill for us this session because the communities that are currently excluded from SNAP, they're our neighbors, they're our friends, they're in our spiritual communities. And it's ridiculous when you think about it that they're not allowed to partake in this really important, vital, and central benefit that keeps our kids fed and nourished and growing. And so it's really important for us as an organization, and it's important for me as an individual also to be really active and involved in this.
Yes.
This is my daughter. This is Alita. She just turned 6 years old a couple of weeks ago. It's her first time at the state capitol. So we're talking about what's happening in the building, that people are debating and voting and learning about things. And she's been pretty excited to come. So here we are. It really hits home as a parent to look at a 6-year-old that I love and that I want to be fed and nourished. I want her to have the energy to grow and learn and play all day and to extend that empathy to other folks. It's so central and it's so vital. And this is such an important bill to pass.
A national Democratic press conference in Washington, D.C. featured three of the key voices from the Pacific Northwest, warning about the impact of possible Medicaid cuts on the states of Oregon and Washington, as well as the nation. Oregon Senators Ron Wyden, Jeff Merkley, and Washington Senator Maria Cantwell all sounded the alarm about what's in the president's and the House of Representatives' plan under the Republicans.
It's time for the war on health care to stop. President Trump's cutting of NIH is causing great impacts to our health care system. President Trump's tariffs are causing higher costs on prescription drugs, and proposed budget that we still haven't seen the details on, $880 billion in Medicaid cuts, is going to cause a devastating impact to communities all across the United States. The fact that in my state, 5 to 7 hospitals could close as a result of that, and many other impacts on rural health care, has caused a group of citizens to send a letter to my House colleagues urging them to oppose cuts to Medicaid rates.
A larger cut to Medicaid funds for the Republicans all have the snake and nerves of the hunts escape full. Their bill is going to benefit kind of seniors and rockets with disabilities. Their bill is the main family working in a loon's health insurance. Their bill is going to mean red tape requirements that force Americans battling cancer to jump through all kinds of hoops if they're going to be able to keep their health. Stride one, reconciliation bill, not stale, $2 trillion, health care and housing and education. Stride two, give death money to the very richest Americans, the billionaires. And strike three, it runs on the enormous debt. Some $15 trillion, according to CBO, over 30 years. The bill has specific promises. One, take health care, take Medicaid. They're demanding devastating cuts that would wipe out on rural hospitals and health care clinics and doing enormous damage to our veterans, those with disabilities, those with wrong recovery programs, to our children.
And Washington, U.S. Senator Patty Murray had a tense exchange today with Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem over the speed of emergency funding granted to red states versus blue states.
Secretary Noem, under your leadership, we have seen you ignore our appropriation laws, our Constitution, common sense, and even basic humanity. Like a lot of Americans, I really have been horrified by the lawlessness and incompetence and cruelty that we have all witnessed. And for all the talk about going after criminals, you have sidetracked DHS staff who are investigating drug dealers, terrorists, human traffickers, and rather than photo ops, we need more of your focus on providing basic diligence, because your crackdown has roped in American citizens and people who are here legally with no criminal record. I'm not going to ask you whether that was right or wrong. I know it's wrong. The world knows it's wrong. And I think the first thing that history is going to say about your leadership is that you are responsible for many of these travesties. So I'm deeply concerned. You've deported a 4-year-old U.S. citizen with cancer. You've disappeared people to a notorious prison in El Salvador, and you have spent $100 million in taxpayer dollars to air TV ads thanking President Trump. That is really reckless. It's unacceptable, and in my opinion, can't continue. The American people are paying for this with our taxpayer dollars and with their most basic rights. In the last 3 months, you have frozen or canceled over $100 billion in funding that was approved by Congress bipartisan. We are talking about everything from disaster relief to grants that keep people safe. But when my staff has requested information on the status of this unacceptable holdup, the department failed to provide any acceptable justification. This illegal freeze, and it is illegal, is taking a real toll on communities who are waiting on the investments that Congress has delivered. So will you commit to immediately unpausing these funds?
Senator, thank you for covering a lot of topics there. Let me touch on a few of those right away.
Well,
what the Trump administration
answer,
is doing, I know, is enforcing the law for the first time under the Biden administration.
I'm asking you about the funds.
Illegal aliens were prioritized over American citizens. Now the scales of justice have been leveled, and
Madam
no
Chair,
one is
I'm
treated better than anyone
because
else.
I asked you a specific
citizens
question.
Are treated the same,
Madam
and
Secretary,
these illegal aliens
I know your
and criminals
answer.
Are being
I heard
deported.
It previously. I'm asking you a specific
the grants
question.
That you are referencing.
Correct.
The grants that you are referencing have been paused and reevaluated to make sure that they are truly being spent in the way to which they were appropriated.
Well, these were,
many of these grants were being diverted
Madam
into
Secretary,
things they were
they
never
were,
intended.
These funds were passed on a bipartisan basis by members.
Absolutely.
Of
and
Congress.
The Biden administration perverted them in how they used them, diverted them to facilitate illegal immigration, to house people in places like the Roosevelt Hotel, who held illegal criminals
We're
that
talking,
took the life
Madam
of
Chair,
Lake and
about $100 billion. Dollars. It is not credible to me that
are
all
the
recipients
who have died
of that,
and lost their children
Madam Secretary, it is not credible. Madam Chair, it is not credible that $100 billion is used to break the law. That just cannot be true. I am very concerned that DHS is now dramatically overspending funding that Congress has not provided. If you were a CEO doing that, I don't think you'd be in your job long. We need accountability and we need answers. And that includes informative responses to oversight questions sent to the department over the last 3 months. I am ranking member on this committee. I have worked with every member of this committee. We take our responsibility serious. To fund your department and others, we need to have answers, we need to have accountability, and we need to make sure you're not overspending money that you were not allocated.
Thank you for that question. I will be very clear in the fact.
It's a statement.
Do you want me to respond?
You can.
Well, I've worked many jobs in my life, but I also have been a CEO. I've run businesses.
I'm not questioning
I've been a governor.
Your credentials. I'm questioning
and it is,
your spending.
We are prioritizing where our security needs are in this country, and we are hoping that this body will agree that reconciliation is necessary to address the things that have been neglected in this country for too long, that we have the technology upgrades, the manpower upgrades that are necessary. So the $170 billion request for the Department of Homeland Security
is
incredibly important to make sure we have the tools
that
we
need. I do have a couple of additional questions. The fact is that you've not been given this funding. Saying that it's going to come in reconciliation that has not passed is not an acceptable answer. I did want to ask about FEMA and disaster relief. This is really important. A lot of disaster relief has been politicized. You have endorsed eliminating FEMA outright. We have seen an upheaval at FEMA that is going to put lives in jeopardy. 1 in 5 FEMA employees have been pushed out, taking this administration's buyout offer. We are losing indispensable staff just weeks away from fire and hurricane season. And over $100 billion in disaster relief and FEMA grants are still being held up. DHS is making it a lot harder to qualify for relief, something people in my home state of Washington are experiencing firsthand. Multiple requests from governors have been rejected in recent weeks, including a request from our state. And we haven't been given any response about this. And I'm watching this and I'm thinking, has President Trump directed you to prioritize funding for Republican states?
Absolutely not.
Have you directed your staff to prioritize funding to Republican-led states over Democratic
Absolutely
states?
Absolutely not. Under this administration, there will not be any politicization of support, relief, FEMA assistance, or grants given based on politics. Every single person will be treated the same. It will be very different than the Biden
Madam
administration.
Madam Secretary, there's a clear trend of Republican-led states getting very fast responses and funding. Democrat-led states are being forced to wait. We have never treated FEMA as a partisan issue in this country.
Maintenance projects across the hundreds of miles of the Pacific Crest Trail, which runs through Oregon and Washington, are being canceled due to uncertainty around federal public land grants and big proposed cuts to federal land management agencies. Suzanne Potter has more on the story.
Access to the beloved Pacific Crest Trail may soon be limited. In the next 2 weeks, the Trump administration is expected to release the reduction in force targets for the National Park Service, the U.S. Forest Service, and the Bureau of Land Management. Megan Wargo with the Pacific Crest Trail Association says federal grant money dried up last October, so they've had to cancel 56 weeks of crew maintenance work on the trails.
If large sections of the trails are forced to be closed because of this lack of maintenance and care, that's devastating that folks won't be able to access their public lands because of these cuts.
Volunteers help keep the trails clear of debris and repair erosion from storm damage. The Pacific Crest Trail runs more than 2,600 miles from Mexico to Canada. It includes landscapes from Anza Borrego in the south to Sequoia, Kings Canyon, and Lake Tahoe in the Sierras and points north. Wargo says the National Trails System Act calls for a public-private partnership to manage the national scenic trails. The Pacific Crest Trail Association normally gets between $667,000 and $1 million per year in federal funding, about a quarter of what it needs to help maintain the PCT.
Typically, that breakdown is about 25% value that's coming from the federal government, while the other 75% is coming through private donations and that volunteer service hour value.
Wargo adds that cuts to the federal workforce hobble agencies' abilities to make grants and approve volunteer projects. And that means less brush gets cleared, raising the risk of wildfires. I'm Suzanne Potter.
It turns out Donald Trump's economic plan, with massive tax cuts and cuts to important programs, is not uniformly supported by the GOP. KBOO News reporter Josh Salem tells us more.
Not all Republicans are on board with Donald Trump's budget proposal. For example, some GOP centrists are saying they will not blindly support steep cuts to Medicaid. Some are trying to protect several Biden-era green energy tax breaks. And reviving SALT, which allows taxpayers to deduct a portion of their state and local taxes, is the line in the sand for at least five Republicans. Capping the deduction at $10,000 hurt many of their constituents. The Republicans are charged with drafting Trump's big, beautiful bill, with some $4.5 trillion in tax breaks and $1.5 trillion in spending cuts by Memorial Day. But some are threatening the proposed budget and tax cuts ahead of a floor vote. Recently, the most conservative members of the House GOP seem to be driving the legislative agenda, and they are demanding as much as $2 trillion in cuts. However, centrist-leaning conservatives who could threaten its passage have recently been pulled into meetings with Trump at the White House or his Florida estate. Many are meeting almost daily with House Speaker Mike Johnson. It is quite clear that not all of the potential tax breaks and spending cuts are popular with voters back home. And this all arises amid growing economic unease striking across the country. Trump has fired thousands of federal workers, including some of the Republicans' constituents, and his massive tariffs could well spark a recession. Democrats appear ready to fight, warning that Trump and his fellow Republicans are tearing down health care and destroying economic security, all in an effort to retain tax breaks approved during Trump's first term, which are expiring at year's end. House Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York said, quote, "What we see from Donald Trump and the Republicans is they are actually crashing the economy in real time. Why are Republicans jumping through hoops to try to reduce Medicaid and food stamps used by millions of Americans?" End quote. He added, quote, "It's all in service of enacting massive tax breaks for their millionaire donors like Elon Musk." Speaker Johnson insists that House Republicans are on track to deliver on Trump's agenda. Much, however, remains under discussion. Some GOP leaders could walk away from the steep Medicaid cuts, which would result in millions of people losing their coverage. Also on the table are tougher work requirements for those receiving Medicaid and food stamp assistance, and more frequent eligibility tests for beneficiaries. Democrats have been warning constituents about what could happen to programs they rely on for health coverage and to earn enough to pay groceries. They point out only three House Republicans have to oppose the cuts to derail the GOP's effort in the House because of its narrow majority. Democratic Senator Cory Booker recently spoke to a district in Arizona. He said that district should change its representative if he voted for the cuts. Booker said, quote, "It's as simple as that," end quote. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
As Congress debates Medicaid cuts and emissions rollbacks, former presidential candidate John Kasich calls for protecting vulnerable Americans. Veterans link fossil fuel dependence to military deaths, and federal funding cuts threaten health and jobs. With more on the stories impacting our democracy, here's today's edition of 2025 Talks.
Medicaid reform has to be done from the standpoint of making sure that those who are the least among us, the most vulnerable, are not neglected or shut out.
2016 Republican presidential candidate John Kasich says budget cuts must protect the most vulnerable. Kasich was governor when Ohio expanded Medicaid under Obamacare, and it now covers a quarter of the state population. Proposals for cutting the program that provides health care for the poor, disabled, and seniors include work requirements or capping individual benefits. President Donald Trump says he's open to brokering peace between India and Pakistan after India launched airstrikes targeting suspected terrorist sites. Pakistan says the strikes killed at least 26 civilians and amount to an act of war. India's description of its attack as non-escalatory suggests they may not be interested in expanding the conflict between the nuclear powers, but analysts fear Pakistan may feel it still needs to respond. Congress is expected to vote this week on revoking federal waivers that let states like California set stricter vehicle pollution rules than the national standards. Laura Kate Bender with the American Lung Association compares that move with their annual survey of air quality.
It's clear from this year's report that people are still breathing too much unhealthy air, and that we need to work harder than ever to implement the great policies we already have on the books.
Massachusetts conservationists are raising concerns about funding cuts for the Appalachian Trail. Hawk Matheny with the Appalachian Trail Conservancy says 5,000 volunteers are struggling to fill the gap as agency layoffs and frozen funds jeopardize upkeep on the beloved and iconic path through 14 states.
We're carrying on. We've been here 100 years and we'll endure through this. It is the people's trail, the citizens' trail, so it's an all-hands effort.
Veterans who are elected officials gathered in Washington to stress that climate change is a national security threat. Elected officials to protect America warns that losing Inflation Reduction Act investments could threaten both public health and military readiness. Dr. Pat Spearman is a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel and former Nevada State Senator.
It's about the people that we lose. 6 out of every 10 deaths in Iraq and Afghanistan were somehow related to oil, guarding it, moving it, offloading it, something. How many more must die because we can't curb our appetite for fossil fuels?
New data shows dark money groups spent nearly $2 billion in the 2024 election, doubling the anonymously donated political funding from the previous presidential cycle. The Department of Justice has quietly canceled over $800 million in grant funding, cutting federal support for crime prevention and nonprofit-led public safety efforts. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Oregon U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley is playing a key role in a fight going on to help America's Native communities get the health care they need. We hear more about this from Antonia Gonzalez from National Native News.
Senators Lisa Murkowski, Jeff Merkley, and Brian Schatz are demanding urgent action from the Secretary of Health and Human Services. In a letter to Robert F. Kennedy Jr., they said the Indian Health Service is unable to deliver quality health care services to American Indians and Alaska Natives, as required by federal law. The senators say staffing shortages and a civilian hiring freeze have made matters worse for an already struggling system. They say not only medical services are in jeopardy, but also billing, appointments, lab work, and other essential tasks, even accreditation for IHS facilities. In the letter, the senators called on Kennedy to halt any further cutbacks without first engaging in meaningful tribal consultation. Murkowski, a Republican, is chair of the Senate Indian Affairs Committee. Schatz, a Democrat, is vice chair. Merkley is also a Democrat and the ranking member of the Senate Interior Environment Appropriations Committee. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Rodgers and Hammerstein's musical Cinderella has two iconic versions, the 1957 movie starring Julie Andrews and the 1997 version starring Brandy and Whitney Houston. A local Portland high school is adding its contribution to that tradition with an onstage adaptation of the musical. KBOO's Althea Billings has more on the story.
Jefferson High School in Portland is putting on its first musical in 20 years. Tabitha Shea is a sophomore at Jefferson, and she's co-stage manager for the school's production of Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella.
It's based off of one of the movies from the 1950s and 1997. It was made for a movie screen, but we're doing an onstage production of it. And it's the very first musical at Jefferson in 20 years. It's the first show that we've had with such a wide production of people. In our last show, we had 13 people, and in this production, we have 50, just like the Cinderella movie that I saw when I was a kid.
During the show, Shay's role as stage manager keeps her busy.
I'm backstage and I'm letting all of the actors help with their entrances. So when you see people move on stage, when you see the set changing, so when you see it going from one place to another, I'm helping direct that and I'm helping move the pieces sometimes. I'm helping people change into their outfits. I'm helping them stay comfortable in their outfits because it gets really hot back there. When I was a kid, I always wanted to participate in a musical at all. They were my favorite. And I've always wanted to do something like that. And I really loved the soundtrack for this one in particular. So this is just like an amazing opportunity. I get to work with great people and an amazing community. And like the community here is so great in so many ways.
Shay says the theater department has made a lot happen with a small budget.
We've been very low on budget. Us being a mostly Black student school, we're not given a lot of budget, especially being in the arts.
Jefferson is located in Albina, Portland's historically Black neighborhood, and its student body is 44% Black. It's structured differently from other Portland public high schools since it doesn't have a specific geographic area that it draws students from. Instead, middle schoolers at Harriet Tubman, Ockley Green, Vernon, and Fabian can choose to attend Jefferson, or they can go to their neighborhood school. Jefferson students can also get dual college credit through Portland Community College while getting their diploma. Around 500 students are enrolled there this year. Shea says she hopes the theater department at Jefferson can draw in more students and the community.
Because of stereotypes surrounding our school and our community, people don't usually enroll at Jefferson when it's a great school and a great community. I just hope that it grows community. It draws students towards our school and towards our theater program so we can continue to grow and continue to put on amazing shows like this one.
There are two remaining showings of the musical, Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella, one at Jefferson High School tonight at 7 p.m., and there's also a Saturday matinee showing at 2 p.m. More information can be found on Instagram. Their profile is @Jefferson_theater or on the Jefferson High School website. For KBOO, I'm Althea Billings.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, May 8th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. You can call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Alexis Ponce, and Althea Billings. The producers Annette Newell and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. The director of evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell, so glad to have you with us. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. So if you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth, up next.